श्री गुरुदेव की जय, श्री महाप्रभु की जय, श्री सर्वचोरांग की जय, हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण So, good morning to all of you. Pranam, welcome. Thanks so much for coming, as well to those connected online. And today, after our celebration of Gundicha Marjan Lila and Sri Rath Yatra yesterday, we are continuing with a series of lectures that we have started here a few days ago, and we have started some other places a few months ago, which is Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahmaji, after the well-known Brahma Vimohan Lila, through which Brahma is basically laying the foundation for the whole Gaudiya Siddhanta in the form of fervent prayers, through which he himself is experiencing different degrees of conversion, transformation, from the Aishwarya side of who Krishna is actually as the source of Narayana and whatnot, to gradually becoming more and more interested and attracted and called into the direction of Madhurya or the intimacy of Vrindavan, in particularly through the portal of Sakyabhava, which is the particular affinity that Brahma is experiencing in relation to Krishna. So today we'll be studying verse 22. There are 40 prayers, so we are a little bit starting the second half of them. Let's make a brief recap of what we saw, like a few or whatever, 3 days ago or something, 2 days ago, verse 21st, in which Brahma was saying the following to Krishna. O greatest one, O supreme person, O self of all selves, O master of all yogic power, who knows where or how or to what extent or when you expand your yoga maya potency and enact your activities within these three worlds. So, as in many other verses, Brahma's questions here are rhetorical, which basically means he's asking something, he's replying to that, and the implied reply is, nobody knows anything about this. Those who think they know, they don't know. And there are those. And Krishna comes to curb their pride, those who think something about you. And of course, Brahma is saying, and I'm the first in that line. I have experienced how you curbed my pride a few minutes ago. I was the one thinking I know so much. And I'm realizing I know almost, and it's much more what I don't know than what I know. And so that should be a humbling reflection that can be applicable at every single moment of our existence. Google knows much more than all that I can know put together in all my lifetime. So I don't know much that more, what to speak in relation to Krishna. So even Krishna himself, as we quoted some verses, he's not fully capable of measuring the extent of his own glories, because they are unlimited. So how you can conceive that? Krishna himself founds eternally exploring the reach of his own charm, beauty, qualities, and especially we will tie that to his appearance as Gaurangadev, Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, where he is eternally dedicated to this project of exploring the depths of Radha's bhav, which is the depths of his own heart. Radha is Krishna's heart. So he's perpetually exploring the reach and depth of Radha bhav in an eternal lila, and it has no end. Sanantadev never finds the end, the limit of Hari's glories. Hari himself never finds the limit of the depth of his own heart in this Nityanavada. So he's perpetually swimming and drowning into an ocean of divine exploration. So, in this verse, Brahma used 4 names for Krishna, which somehow indicate this reply that only you know, if you know. So, which were these 4 names? Let's see how much we recall them. In order, please. Only the first one, Brahma.
Bhuman.
Okay, Bhuman. The second Bhagavan. One. Bhagavan. The third one. The fourth one, none of the ones who raised their hands. Saragrahi. Last one, Yogeshwara. So these are the 4 names, which basically are replies to these different questions. And when Brahma is saying, where do you manifest your unlimited pastimes? He said, Bhumam, which means unbounded, unlimited. So you are unlimited, you are all-pervading, so you can manifest your unlimited forms anywhere. You have no limit of space and so on. Although you seem to appear in a three-dimensional space, like now, Brahmi say, I'm seeing you here on Earth, but some minutes ago I saw a universe is coming from your form. Although it seems now that your form is in the universe, a few minutes ago I saw the universe is coming from you, and not only one universe, but unlimited ones. So that's the first part. The second question is how? How do you manifest your unlimited pastimes, and then Bhagavan comes, the possessor of all Aishwarya. You can perform all these different lilas, because how do you do that? You have all Aishwarya, you have all majesty, you can do whatever you like. And we gave the example of Govardhan Lila, how Krishna lifted the hill without uprooting that, sustaining that, without having columns on pillars on both sides, but just with the tip of one finger. And so that's Bhagavan. Only Bhagavan can do that. Just in case you were tempted to go to the archipelago and get some island and try to imitate, that won't work. The retreat will be ruined. So let's continue in peace here in Chaitanya. So the third question that Brahma makes, how many? How many of your pastimes do you have? And then he's called Paratman, which can mean Paramatma, or he who is in every heart, but also Paratma means, Atma means the source of the very life. Of para, according to, I think, Sanatana Goswami, to all, you are the source of all para, which means all avatars. So we are the source of all avatars. So you alone know how many of these divine descents and pastimes are performed, because you are the source of all of them. And finally, the last question is when? When do you manifest these pastimes? And the name, corresponding name that replies to that is Yogeshwara, which means, among other things, you pervade all three phases of time. And therefore, you are not constrained by that. You can manifest that whenever you want. And we gave the example of Krishna showing the future to Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Here is the result of the battle. Just look for a minute. He can travel in time without interruption, if you will. And also the last name, Yogeshwara, somehow was connected to another similar word mentioned in the verse, which is Yogamayam. So ultimately, Brahma concludes, you spread your yoga maya, and by your divine internal potency, you can make the impossible possible. In other words, there's nothing impossible for you. Srila Prabhupada said the word impossible, quoting Napoleon, is in the false dictionary. Like implying, I mean, for us, it's so many things are impossible, but if you take shelter in he who is the master of yoga maya, by that arrangement, so many things can become possible that will remain impossible otherwise. So, in today's verse, we will finish a particular series of section of this whole bigger section of prayers, which ends with this today's verse, 22. And Brahma now will turn from presenting some praise to Yoga Maya, now he will turn to Mahamaya, to Maya Shakti as we know her. I mean, we think we know her even. So we will share some reflection today of the nature of this world. And of course, by properly understanding that, that will give us further glimpses into the nature of the other world, or the other Maya, if you will, also. So, till now, Brahma, just to connect one verse to the other a little bit more, till now, in the previous verses, some of them we saw in other places some weeks ago, Brahma explained, Bhagavan's, your body, Krishna's body, has inconceivable potencies, is all-pervading. It seems one, it seems medium size, but it's unlimited, and all the other forms of the Absolute emanate from that. And so there, your body contains unlimited forms, although remains indivisible, you see?
Indivisible.
So now, he also will explain, because of your inconceivable power, and he will direct his attention to this world, and he will say, this endlessly mutable, transforming material world somehow seems eternal for those who are here. He will try to explain the experience of being in Maya, as we know it. We have heard that quote, you are in Maya. But what does it mean? It's not just a guilt trip or something to point to others or something, but what was the implication of that? So the verse will start with the word tasmat, which means therefore. So that implies continuity between the previous verse and today. So, okay, we don't have today for following the Sanskrit. I forgot to.
I think we have.
We can have it on the phone always, or yeah, if someone is having. I have two copies.
Okay. If someone wants. So you were going to say I have two 10, phones. 14, 22. That's too much. That's 10, 14, 22. Hmm? So I'll recite it once myself, and then if you want, you can follow. We can recite it all together a second time. This is in Basanta Tilak. That's a particular meter in which this verse is. Tashmad idam jagadase shama satsarupam swapna bhamastadishanam purudhukadhukam twayeva nitya sukha bodhatanatvananti mayatta udyadapi yatsati bhav. Mayata udyadapi yat sati bhavavati.
Tasmadidam jagadase shama satsarupam svapna bhamasta dishanam purudukha dukam vayeva nitya sukha bodhatana vanante mayata udyadapi yat sati bhavavati.
So, translation, you may have different translations there. But basically, it says, therefore, this entire universe, which is insubstantial like a dream, which covers consciousness, which is full of abundant and endless misery, and which arises out of your Maya potency, still appears as real, because it is situated in you, who are limitless and possess a body that is eternal, full of bliss and consciousness. So this is today's verse, verse 22. So let's go for a minute to the word by word, and then we share some commentaries and explanations. So the very first word of the verse, as we mentioned, is tasmat, which means therefore. So it's in connection to the previous verse. Remember, the previous verses mentioned, Brahma mentioned how Krishna came to this world in Lila Avatar. So he has pastimes in this world. So tasmat is connected to that. Therefore, implying, because you have pastimes in this world, and now comes today's verse in that connection. Idam, idam means this, jagat, universe, so pointing to this universe. Ashesham, entire. Asat sarupam, referring to the nature of this universe. Sarupam means nature, and asat means basically unreal, or temporary. We will try to clarify it. Every time we say unreal, what's the meaning? But basically, it's whose essential nature is unreal or temporary. Swapna abhavam, like a dream. Swapna abhavam, sorry. Like a dream. The experience is like a dream. Astadishanam, in which wherein awareness becomes covered over. So here's describing what's the experience of being under the influence of Maya Shakti. And purudukha dukham, if that's not enough. It's full of repeated miseries. Twayi, within you, eva, only. And now comes the contrast. Nitya, sukha, bodha. Nitya means eternal. Sukha means happiness. And bodha means awareness. Tano, whose body? So your body is made of all the things, which basically means Satchidananda, in contrast with the opposite of that found in inert matter. Anante means unlimited, or infinite, mayataha, from maya, udyat, arising, api, although, yat, which, sat eva, as if real, and abhavati, appears. So it appears if it's real, in other words, because it has a connection with you. So let's begin with my Guru Maharaj's short explanation, Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhad, shared in his forthcoming book, to this particular verse. This will be even shorter than the previous one. As if you were creating some expectation. Maintain the expectation, but it will be, we have to unpack this sutra line. It says, the dreamlike illusory world appears real only because of your appearance within it. That's what Brahma is implying. By which it can be understood in relation to its source. So here Brahma is speaking about the experience of the world under the influence of Maya Shakti. Which is like a dream, basically. We'll try to unpack what's the meaning of the symbology here, why the idea of dream is being used, and so on. And because you appear within this world, the fact that you enter this world, that gives the world a particular resemblance, if you will. But actually, if it's devoid of a connection with you, the world is something else. The main point will be that. One thing is to see the world without Krishna in it. Another thing is to see the world with Krishna in the center. That will be the main post that Brahma will be trying to pound in this particular verse. If you see the world with Krishna in the center, the world will be a facilitator, the world will be a portal, the world will point to Krishna everywhere. If you don't see Krishna in this world, that will be unreal. So Brahma begins citing the attributes of the material world without being seen in connection to Krishna, if you will. So he starts saying asvat swarupa, which is basically, it's ephemeral in nature. Which it is. The nature of matter is ephemeral. So whose nature is ephemeral? Here today, gone tomorrow, in the words of my Guru Maharaj. Astadhisana, it's devoid of consciousness. It's inert, again. Ampuru dukkha dukkhanam. It's like replete with misery. So Brahma is using those types of expression on one side. And in contrast, then he speaks about Bhagavan and his body, which enters the world. And what's the nature of Bhagavan's body? Nitya, sukha, bodha. So he creates this contrast. Nitya means permanent, eternal. Sukha means happiness, bodha means consciousness. So basically it's like saying Satchidananda. So your body, your form, Bhagavan is Satchidananda. Material world is Asat, Achit, Nirananda. Asat Swarup, Astadi Isana, Paraduka, Puruduka Dukam. Basically it's to say devoid of permanence, devoid of consciousness, devoid of inherent bliss. So asat, achit, nirananda, while you are sat, chit, ananda. So the fact that the sat, chit, ananda enters the asat, asat, achit, and nirananda gives a resemblance that all things are found there without of you, something like that. So that's an interesting way how Brahma is mentioning that. Why people under the influence of Maya Shakti thinks that everything here is sat, chit, ananda? Because you who are Satchidananda continually are entering this world. So that creates that. That's the influence of your mystic potency. Of course, one may wonder in this connection a few things. For example, if Krishna is the source of everything and he said, we read that today in the morning, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, everything comes from me, Mata Sarvam Pravartate. So generally we hear that an effect depends on its cause. So if the world is the effect and Krishna is the cause, and the cause is Satchidananda, how the effect of Satchidananda is Asat, Achit, Nirananda. Ideally one expects to find similar attributes in the effect that in relation to those that are found in the cause. And sometimes also, even when we speak about some cause, at least when we speak of a material cause creating some effect, generally what we think, at least our experience in this world, is that the raw materials you used experience some transformation in the course of becoming something else. Like you have clay and then it becomes a clay pot. So some transformation is there. You no longer see the clay now, you see now the clay pot. So the point is does this same thing happen when Bhagavan, if you will, produces the world? Produces is not beginning in time, but what the universes emanate from him somehow. Does this happen? He's affected. The original cause is affected when the effect comes. And of course, Brahma is replying here. No. No. Okay. Just in case I want to confirm we are on the same page. That's not happening. And you can say, but why is not happening? We see that happening always in this world. Yes, but Bhagavan has, and we go again to the Achintya Shakti button. Bhagavan has inconceivable power. The word Maya here refers inconceivable power. Even if you want to speak about Mahamaya, and not in detail, Yoga Maya, still Mahamaya is his inconceivable power. The very word Maya indicates inconceivability of power. So the point is, he's creating all these universes out of himself, but he doesn't undergo any transformation whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the example given, if we have to resort to some analogies, is the touchstone, like Chintamani. It touches something, and whatever that touchstone touches, converts, transforms into something, but the touchstone remains touchstone. Doesn't become whatever the effect is. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes example is given Kalpavriksha, a wish-fulfilling tree. That can grant anything to whoever is requesting, but the tree itself is not undergoing any transformation, remains the same, but is creating and transforming and so on. And the tree doesn't need to resort to anything external to itself. It's not that Kalpavriksha is there and you request something, and Kalpavriksha say, 1 minute I need to call Amazon to grant your wish and bring whatever you're asking for or something. No? It's all inside. All the resources are included there. Mm-hmm. So similarly, Bhagavan possesses Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency, so he can perform acts that otherwise will be impossible. Mm-hmm. So the point is that the fact that Bhagavan performs something that for us is inconceivable and for us is inexplicable at one point, it doesn't mean there's no reason to dismiss those acts as impossible. Generally, we have that tendency. If I cannot explain something, that cannot happen. It's not possible. But actually, we are saying, because I cannot explain that to myself, that cannot happen. I only allow things to happen that I can grasp in my fist, that I can just control. And that's the tendency in many circles of knowledge in this world. Whatever can fit into our particular level of understanding or capacity, be it rational, intellectual, whatever, that's reality, that's objective reality. Everything else is just like some myth. This Achintya button, not possible here. But still we find so many of these things even in this world, and many of these things that are totally inexplicable and apparently contradictory. We won't enter into those details today, but there's lots of that even in the realm of science. Particles and waves at the same time and all these type of things, that what's going on here. So let's go to some of the ancient commentaries on the Bhagavatam, beginning with Sridhar Swami, and then continue with other of our acharyas. So Sridhar Swami says, again, he invokes Krishna, who may say something between one verse and the other. So Krishna may say to Brahma before this verse, okay, fine. The avatars have an inconceivable glory. If the material world is unreal, why does it seem to be real? So Brahma replies in this verse. Of course, the material world is real, but what we experience through Maya Shakti is not real. So Krishna says, why does it seem to be real? So Brahma is replying in this verse. So the expression Sad Eva, Sridhar Swami mentions, which means as if real or as if eternal, also signifies that not only applies to eternal, but applies to all the three qualities. The word seems as if eternal, seems as if full of pleasure, full of ananda, and seems as if conscious. Again, that's experience for one under the influence of Maya Shakti. It seems it's all the neon lights are active there. Everything is, all the Satchidananda is waiting for me there, outside. It seems permanent, it seems eternal, it seems full of pleasure, and it seems alive, basically. But Brahma replies in that world, it seems so. Sad Eva, as if Eva, Sad Eva, Chit Eva Ananda Eva as if. It appears as real, as eternal, it appears as if conscious, it appears as if full of pleasure because of the qualities that are in you who are Satchidananda, because you are the foundation of the world and you are Satchidananda. Whatever is not Satchidananda appears as if Satchidananda because of the connection with you. In other words, here Brahma is hinting, if you relate to the world in connection to its founds, to its source, then the world will provide you Satchidananda. Because you connect the world with its source, who is Satchidananda personified. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Anadira Dir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. So when the word asat is used here again, it doesn't imply falsehood, you say falsehood? Like implying the word doesn't exist. That's what, for example, Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya. That's what Shankaracharya will say. The world is false. Maya, everything is false except for Brahman. But we don't say that. We don't subscribe to Advaita Vedanta. Mitya means without an existence. But we will say asat means temporary. The world is temporary, but it's a Shakti of Bhagavan. The world is a potency of the Lord. And Bhagavan exists eternally with all his potencies. God and his energies exist forever, so his energies must be real. But how we perceive those energies, that's another thing. So Maya has an existence. Maya is not unreal. But what you see through the filter of Maya, that's unreal. Basically, that's the point. And specifically here, Maya means, Sridhar Swami will say, inconceivable power. No need to go to Yoga Maya to speak about inconceivable power. Just let's remain in analyzing Maya Shakti. If you analyze Maya Shakti properly, you will realize, wow, there's something extraordinary here. That's why the Bhagavatam is saying, how this verse goes. Sranvantam Shadayanitya Maya Yatmana Mohyati. I forgot the first line. But basically saying, for those who properly speak about Maya Shakti and understand Maya Shakti, they transcend Maya Shakti. So the way to transcend Maya Shakti is to understand Maya Shakti, to speak about Maya Shakti in the context of Shaktiman, of the energetic source, you will understand all the energies. And we need some fun or something. We are losing 3/4 of the audience here. Go, Haribo! And we lost 3 or 4, but even those who remain. Too many pancakes. I told you how to measure that. That's why I only take fruits, because if not, I will fall asleep while giving class myself. Let's go to Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Vaishnav Toshani after Sridhar Swami. So he's paraphrasing Brahma similarly. And he says, Brahma is saying this verse through Sanatana Goswami Prabhu. Oh, what can be said? The reality of your pastimes in your various avatars shine as truth. Because although the material world is a form of unreality, it appears to be real because of a connection with you. Again, the same point is made. The world here is compared to a dream, which seems real, but it's actually temporary. It's real, which seems permanent. That's the idea of sat, asat. But it's compared to a dream. In other words, a dream is real. It's not false. What you may see in the dream is bizarre in some cases. But in some cases, you can receive revelations in dreams also. So the idea here is, in a dream, you can see a very extreme, psychedelic, bizarre stuff that makes no sense. But also, you can experience something real. And Bhagavan can reveal to you in a dream. So similarly, Maya Shakti, according to how you relate to it, can be something that makes no sense whatsoever, if seen without Bhagavan in the center, or it can reveal Bhagavan to you if you approach that Shakti in consideration with the Shaktiman, with the source of the Shakti. So basically this idea, you know, if it's not seen without you in the center, nonetheless it's pointing to you indirectly. It seems to be filled with Ananda because you are filled with Ananda. The world, it seems to be full of life because you are fully conscious. The world seems to be eternal. The prospect for enjoyment because you are eternal. And you are the source of all this. So for those who understand the world, this world is speaking to them about you ultimately. Of course, also the idea of the world being described as a dream is in connection that in a dream you may, you may dream that you are a king and you are having all this opulence and all this money, and of course you wake up and you still are the same homeless person. Want to live, to have a castle or things like that. And you wake up and, oh, Sri Chaitanya, this is your castle. Yeah. This is a whole kingdom. No need of a castle, really. Some internal jokes here. Paroksha, but not so paroksha in this case. But the point is, how to say, no? I mean, the idea of happiness in this world, again, without Krishna in the equation, that's not real, basically. That's not happening. Because the very notion of happiness, as we understand it here, is basically a mental construct. What you think is joyful, what you think gives you happiness, is totally relative. I mean, it varies so much from one species to the other. I mean, what makes you fully joyful is not the same as Frodo's. Not always. Sometimes you may coincide for sure, but in some cases there may be differences. It will vary, even if you are from the same species, it will vary from one person to another. Or it will vary from one stage of life to another. If you look back, or from one day to another, or from moment of one day to another moment of the day, also from evening to afternoon. For example, I don't know, regarding the sense of joy is different from one species to another. Again, if you see a vulture, you say, having a midday feast, and you see what the vulture is having, you may just inspire to vomit, basically. Because vulture may be eating just one half-rotten animal dead there. And as Sri Jiva Goswami said, the only rasa that you find in this world is Vibhatsa rasa. And Vibhatsa means like disgust. So for the vulture, it's like, Sarira Vidyaja. But you are vomiting on the other side. No? And maybe the vulture, they won't go to your vomit. I mean, sorry, but just to make it clear. For the vulture, that's great. And you cannot argue with the vulture. Why can't you eat my... He's like... So it's all relative regarding species. And even if we are in one same species, again, for a rich person, some rich person may find, unedible, impossible to eat, unedible what some homeless person is having as a banquet. Someone poor from the street may receive some food, say, wow, this is a banquet. He's impoverished. But the rich person is like, he will be inspired to vomit at that point on some level. So one man's food is another poison, if you will. It's so relative. Or different stages of life is the same. No? I mean, when we were children, we were so interested in some particular things. But if I now bring some toys and start to give toys and little cars, or as I sometimes give the example, I have some pacifiers here and start to give one pacifier to each one and let's have fun now. And you're like, you try, not working, Maharaj. But you had so many years in ecstasy, such an Ananda experience with the pacifier. What's going on? I'm no longer a baby. We have now some other pacifiers. we may have to return to the more original, more organic one. But the point is, we become disinterested in our so-called childhood pleasures, or so, because another stage of life, or even from one day to another, you know, some things change for us in life. Even when we met all this, when we start to know about spiritual life, In many ways, we abandoned our previous lifetime. In many cases, relatively quickly. So something which was the all-in-all last week, now I realize it's not. So again, the sense of what's joyful, what's pleasurable, may shift considerably quickly. No? Or even from morning to evening, as we were mentioning. No? What someone may be relishing at breakfast, that won't be relishable at lunch. No? Just in case, don't bring me fruits for lunch. They are perfect in breakfast, but for lunch, digestive fire is asking for a forest, no? To forest fire as well. Mm-hmm. So, or even in the same food, no? what you start eating at the beginning of one food, of one meal, may seem distasteful to eat at the end, mm-hmm. Or vice versa, if you follow some of these orders, okay, let's begin with this, let's end with sweet. For some people, like, how can you begin eating that? That's not joyful, but after 10 minutes, oh, that's so joyful at this stage. So my point is, no? The conclusion here is the so-called happiness of what we think material life is not something fixed in one place, in one moment, in one species. It's not agreement, universal consensus. Okay, this is happiness for everyone in all time, species, day, morning, evening, animal. It's so much in flux, basically. Mm-hmm. And of course, just in case, this may be basic lesson, but we are always in need to recall them, the apparent pleasure that we project in sense objects are not in the sense objects themselves. No? It's not that the sense objects are inherently pleasurable, because they are asat, achit, nirananda. They don't have ananda in them. As my Guru Maharaj will say, we project, they are full of ananda because we are projecting our own sense of self to the environment. Through attachment, we feel, oh, this can give me so much life, so much joy. But you are projecting your own life, your own Satchidananda constitution into the Asat Achit Nirananda. So basically, the conclusion is that the concept of pleasure lies within the mind. In your mind, you are assigning, you are labeling reality, pleasure, distress. I like, I don't like. I like now, I don't like later. I like before, I like when I was a child, not now, in the morning, not in the evening, yesterday, not tomorrow, whatever. So you project, we project this to the environment. Like they say, was a popular saying, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. So according to the lens you have, beauty will be found or not, and in a particular way. So it's pretty subjective how much we are perceiving reality in this sense. That's why yogic science means, mysticism means go beyond the mind, go beyond this labeling machine, basically, and see reality in an impartial and in objective terms. Because if not, you are just tainting, no, how do you say? Well, painting reality with your own particular rag, your own lens of attachment. The famous example sometimes is a very beautiful lady can come into the room, and different personalities will appreciate that reality according to their own lens. So the beautiful lady appears and a young boy is there, he will find some romantic prospect there. Oh, beautiful girl. I'm beautiful boy, so I think we will match. No. So he sees her in that particular context. If a lion sees the beautiful girl, he'll say, Sarira Vidyajal again. Lunch is ready. She's seeing her as beautiful, but for other reasons. So all of them are seeing a girl and I see beauty, but for their own reasons. And finally, if a yogi or a saint is seeing the girl, he will see beauty, but he will see the soul, he will see the atma, the real person, and he will see the beauty connected to that. So the point is, these three personalities are seeing the same thing, but they are not seeing the same thing. Follow? And of course, the one who is seeing the real thing is the one who is going beyond all these upadis, all these layers of identification and misidentification. So again, as basic as this sounds, we still need to walk that talk, because sometimes still we are running after sense objects with the hope, with the expectation, oh, that will be, fill me, that will give me so much joy, I will be finally happy. So we mistake these two ideas of sense pleasure equals happiness. No matter how many times we have heard that, still we need to fully realize that, to live, to walk the talk. Because why we pursue sense objects? Because there's some belief in us that that's equal happiness. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, exactly the opposite. He says sense objects are the source of misery. He says dukkha yoni, in the fifth chapter. They are the womb from which suffering is born, in the words of Guru Maharaj as well. No. Sense objects are the source of misery, he's saying. If you approach them, that's the idea, expecting from them something which is not there. And of course, therefore, in order for us to transcend this mukdata, in this case, this foolishness, we need to train our mind, train our eye with scriptural knowledge, with proper discrimination, with proper devotional culture, through which we will assimilate, as Guru Maharaj was saying today in the morning. Shastra can give knowledge, but you have to apply yourself in practice to realize that, to develop an eye, a vision, not only information, but transformation. So in the case of a devotee, and a serious devotee who is walking the talk, they will receive this information, they will apply that in practice, and they will develop a vision. And the universe will transform for them. When they see the universe, they won't see opportunities for exploitation, but they will see opportunities for service. Service opportunities at every single stage. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur will say, this world is potential paraphernalia to be engaged in the service of Krishna. That's the world. Potential paraphernalia. It's like a big Arctic plate. What do you have in the Arctic plate? You have earth, water, fire, air, ether. Symbolizing those, all these ingredients. Incense and lamp, water, and so on. Chamara sound, conch shell. So the plate of Arctic, one way of understanding that, symbolizes the whole world. The whole universe is in that plate. So what do you do with the universe? You don't do that and offer that to you first. Although that's what we are trying to do many times. Running after and offering everything, seeing everything like, that should be offered to me, that converges in me. No. You first take all of that, offer to Bhagavan, and then you receive the remnants of that. Then you receive the lamb, then you receive the incense, then you receive the water. You receive them, but first it's consecrated to Bhagavan, to its source. You acknowledge the connection between Shakti and Shaktiman, and then you can legally relate to those things in an enlightening way. The world is enlightening you. So that's the whole idea of this symbology and ritual. So the whole world is like a big plate of Arctic. And we are to engage potential paraphernalia to be engaged in the service of Bhagavan. So let's conclude Sanatan Goswami's commentary. Don't forget we're in that context. And in this connection regarding how the world, as miserable as it's described, can become a source of enlightenment, he concludes saying, because of the inconceivable glory of the pastimes of your avatars, the world, if used to attain you, if used as service to you, then it becomes excellent. Sat eva avabhati. That's another way of understanding it. Or he will say, even the world shines like Vaikuntha. He will say. So this world can become Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. You can invoke transcendence in the midst of apparent ordinary situation. I always liked in this connection Thomas Merton's quote. He also would say, your salvation begins in the most ordinary moments of your daily life. Like implying, if you are not able to find something extraordinary in the most ordinary moments, you are not beginning your salvation project. In other words, don't expect something super extraordinary to happen, and only then I begin, okay, Krishna is connected with... No, try to pay attention how everything, if something seems ordinary, that's your ordinary vision. It's not that the thing is ordinary in itself. It has a connection with Krishna. How can it be ordinary? And you have ordinary vision because you are not connecting your vision with Krishna. That's why it remains ordinary. Because you can have extraordinary vision if that keeps aligned, fine-tuned with your own source. It's not that the world has a source. You also have, and the source is the same. There is some universal, consensual source. So that's an interesting thing, no? You find all these statements in Shastra. The world is a source of misery. But we have to put all in the scale. And this, some other things are being said. Like when you hear, family life is a dark well. So you are falling to the dark well of family life. What do you think? How do you turn?
Regarding this metaphor.
Yeah.
I don't have direct experience, but it may seem like a rabbit hole to some.
Okay, he was cautious. Okay, you cannot speak without experience. That's an important point. But of course, we know the point is you hear this type of statements, but you hear the other types of statements which show the glories of that. So the point, or sometimes you hear woman not like this, but you also hear woman not like that, and in the greatest sense. And this, with man or whatever, I mean, this world is crap, and this world can show you Krishna. So the point is, what's the meaning of this apparently contradict? It all depends how you approach these realities. Again, how you approach the lady. If you approach the lady as a yogi, there's no entanglement of problem. And if you approach the lady as an exploiter, there is problem. Not because of the lady, but because of your distorted eye. Sometimes one devotee say that, like speaking about Mahamaya, Yogamaya, he say, if you approach Maya with attitude of service, if you want to exploit her, he will appear like a charming lady and you will be entangled in that and you want to exploit. But if you approach us in service, Maya will appear like a mother that will nourish you and protect you, something like this. Like it all depends a lot about, I mean, personal responsibility on how we are approaching things and not playing the victim about, oh no, Maya is taking me and I'm... Because sometimes you can even enter into that narrative and not take full commitment about which are your choices, how they're being made. So yeah, Krishna in the Gita say, Dukalayama Sashvatam, world is miserable and temporary. So you're like, okay. But again, in the context of, if you approach it with the wrong attitude, it's miserable. And if you say, but I'm having a great time, Maharaj, it's not miserable, at least today. Just wait till tomorrow. Ashashvatam means because the days are counted. No matter how great moment you are having, materially speaking, ashashvatam. The more great moment you are having, the greater the pain will be when you are not having that great moment. It's as simple as that. And of course, many people do not want to hear those things where they are just experiencing the zenith of the wave. No, they are like surfing on the, how do you say, the tip of the wave of material excitement and someone comes, but that will be temporary. I don't want to hear that now. Better you hear now, because when the wave is over, you will have the higher you go, the more painful you will go down then. Again, that's when you are not seeing the world with proper eyes. But if not, instead of Dukalayama Sarsvatam, someone like Prabhupada Saraswati will say Vishwapurnam Sukhayate, which means the whole universe is filled with joy. And that verse is in the context of Yat Karunya Kataksha Vaibhavatam Tam Eva Gaurastuna. If someone receives the silent glance of Mahaprabhu, and then he gives a long list of things, what will be the consequence of receiving the silent glance of Mahaprabhu? Kaivalam Narakayate Tridashapura Kasha Pushpayate Durdantendriya Kala Sarpapatale Prutkata Damstrayate Vishvam Purnam Sukhayate Vidhi Mahendra Adishtakitayate Yat Karunya Kataksha Vaibhavatam Tameva Gaurastuna. I offer pranam to that Gaur by whose silent glass long list comes there. The attainment of mukti is like hell. Heavenly pleasures seem like a flower in the sky, pure phantasmagoria. And all these type of things. Vishvapurnam Sukhayate. And the world becomes filled with joy. Because Mahaprabhu's grace educates your vision to see, wow, all this can be engaged. It's potential, again, paraphernalia to be engaged in bhakti. So it's not that senses are necessarily a problem. In this verse, it also says, Durdantendriya kala sarpapatale prutkata damstrayat. The senses sometimes are compared like a dangerous snake that will bite you with poison and kill you. But by the grace of Mahaprabhu, the senses now are like a serpent which, how to say, whose fangs have been taken out. So you can play with the serpent now as a friend, it cannot do anything. Even it can like bite, and you're like, oh, how nice. No, we are having such fun now. Now. Instead of killing you, now it's giving you joy. So the same thing, the senses can be a way, a road to hell, or can be a road to enlightenment. Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Bhavet Na Bhavet Grahyam Indriyai Shrigon Mukhi Jivado Swayameva Shpuratida. That's the point there. The senses cannot grasp the name of Krishna form, all this that is transcendental. Senses cannot reach that point. But the verse says, if you engage those senses in the context of bhakti, those senses will facilitate that experience, interestingly. But in the context of bhakti, daivim prakriti masrita. Those same senses that cannot reach transcendence will facilitate transcendence when engaged in connection to bhakti. Anyhow, let's continue. We have some minutes left. Do you agree? Sure? Okay, I want just brutal honesty from your side. Okay, someone wants to just take a nap, no problem. I will trust you're engaging your service, your senses in preserving your sadhaka and the service of Krishna. But no snoring, please. I know I may be asking too much. Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary now, brief words. He's saying that this verse means the following. Because of the substantial existence of things related to you, the universe acquires substantiality to some degree. Because of the fact that Maya to take support of you due to being your potency. So that's the idea. And then he concludes saying, but in the absence of such a state, the world is like a rabbit's horn. Which basically means something that you don't, it's a dreamlike, you don't have experience of a rabbit's horn. So without such a statement, which without acknowledging your presence, Krishna, in connection to the world, whatever you will see in the world will be like phantasmagoria, some form of hallucination. It seems it's there, it's not there. Like the famous example of the mirage. Mirage? It's there. It's there. And you jump, slow motion, trying to catch the whole thing. And the only thing that is there is sand in your face, basically. But all the coconuts and the pool and the people there having fun, it's not there. It's not there. Let's continue with three final short commentaries. Or maybe four, let's see. But all of them pointing to this point, which I think it's an important post to pawn. Srinivas Suri, another commentator of the Bhagavad, he's saying, the world is as if real, meaning everything seems to be its real identity. And he gives examples. I am a Brahmana. He's fat. She's thin. Now, all these designations that seem to be the real thing. Whereas in fact, the self is pure consciousness. In other words, unless you reach this level of yogic sight, when you see everyone as pure consciousness, what you are seeing is reality filtered by Maya Shakti. No? He's fat, he's young, upadis, no designations, limiting adjuncts. He's fat, he's black, he's nice, he's... you are not seeing pure, unadulterable? Unadulterable? Consciousness. So the world, again, is not mitya. No, the world is not false. But to view the world independently of the absolute, that's mitya. That's false. What you will catch through that exercise, that's totally false. Like said, rabbit's horn. Try to see reality, the world, independent of the absolute. That forced unplugging, if you will, which is not possible, actually, shows you something that is not possible. Because you are trying to do something that is not possible. Okay, I will try to see the world as if God does not exist. Try, but he remains existing, he remains the source. But if you try to do that, what you will see through that impossible project is impossible sides. And of course, trying to conduct your life based on that impossibility creates so much layers of dreamlike and bizarre situations. Balabhacharya says something similar. He says, on account of you, Brahma is saying to Krishna through Balabhacharya, on account of you, the world seems to be the real thing. That's what he mentioned. For those who are under Maya Shakti, they see the world as the real thing, but actually, because the world has some connection with you, who are you who are real, the world seems like the real thing, but it's just like reflecting the real. The world is like a shadow that is pointing to the original, from where the shadow is coming. So instead of becoming totally captured and charmed by the shadow, oh, how nice this shadow and this shady section here and this particular form, why don't you direct your attention towards the original from which the shadow is coming? There's much more in the original than in the shadow. There's something in the shadow, something, but it's also depending on the original, and there's so much more there in the original. He says, Asat Swarup, or whose nature is unreal, means the nature of the world is like the nature of unrighteous people. He connects Asat, in this case, with Asat, what we say Asat Sangha, someone who is not a sadhu, Asadhu. So the nature of the world is like the nature of unrighteous people. The idea is the world obscures the true path, like unrighteous people. Sadhus shed light on the right path. Non-sadhus shed shadow on the right path, if you will. And this world sheds shadow on the right path if seen without a connection with you. If seen without sadhus, basically. Sadhus are the ones who teach us how to relate to the world, how to do everything. Therefore, Balabhacharya concludes, the world is fine when it has a connection with you. Otherwise, it is just the opposite. Big headache. But if it has a connection with you, the idea is, of course it has a connection with you, but if that connection is seen, acknowledged by us, then the experience will be okay. If we have Sambandha Gyan, as we spoke the other day, we have this knowledge that showed us how Sambandha, how Sam, everything is Bandha, is tied, connected with Krishna, then there is no more problem. Srila Siddharamas will say in his own words, all your problems arise due to a lack of conception. So I like to think about that. All your problems arise due to lack of Sambandha. Because that's Sambandha, as Guru Maharaj will say, conceptual orientation. So because of lack of conception means because of losing sight of how everything is connected with Krishna, all your problems come. You start to see reality without Krishna and try to solve that problem without Krishna. So the headache just becomes like snowball. Lack of conception. You are conceiving, trying to conceive reality without its center. Problem. But if Sambandha Gyan is there, no more problems. Because all is centered in Krishna. Baladev Vidyabhushan says something similar. He says, the joy of those in the world, again, the joy of those in the world without being aware of you, so-called joy, the joy of those in the world is a form of sadness, like honey mixed with poison. They think they are having a great time, but actually they are suffering a lot. And that's what the sage is seeing. No? If the sage is looking at, I don't know, all these Hollywood stars appearing. All these Hollywood stars appearing on TV and walking these red carpets and pictures, and they seem so happy. But a sadhu will realize they are suffering so much. They're having such a miserable moment. And they're trying to get distracted from that and do away with that. So that so-called happiness is like honey mixed with poison. It sounds sweet, but actually it's cause of repeated death. Why, Baladev Vidyabhushan said, the world has been originating from Triguna Maya, Maraja Sattvas Tamas, and it's going to extinction in her. So it's everything that falls under the influence of Maya is in species in danger of extinction, like a way to put that. It will finish. whatever you want, no matter how much you try to preserve, is destined to be extended. Nonetheless, the world seems resplendent to ignorant people. So that's, I remember once, Ambarish, one devotee who is an artist, he made an interesting painting. It was like a, on one side of the painting was like a big jaw, you say, like the jaws, like big metal jaw, like a mouth made of metal with the head of a clock, not like time, all the boring time. And there was a whole path converging in that mouth. And the whole path was made of, how do you say, like when you do this film movies, the material you use for the old material for the film movies?
The reel.
The reel? So the path was surreal. Surreal. And on the path were like a nice lady and money falling and all those different experiences, which actually are like a movie. You are living your own movie. How does the movie end? All those movies converge into the jaws of all the boring time, basically. It was like intense. Idea. So that is, it all is destined to extinction, but somehow the world seems resplendent to that people. They are running into the jaws of death, and they are just like celebrating. That's your Maya. That's the power of your Maya Shakti. Now that's the very question that was asked to Yudhishthira Maharaj in the Mahabharata, in the lake of death. So many questions were there, and this was maybe the most crucial and famous one, and difficult to answer. He was asked, what's the most like astonishing thing you can find in this world? I mean, the list is so long, you don't know when to begin. But he had to reply, give the correct answer, and there was only one correct answer. The most astonishing thing in this world. So Yudhishthira Maharaj thought for a moment, and the life of his brothers was depending on his answer, basically. See, the most astonishing thing I see in this world is that around me, everything is entering the jaws of death. Everyone is dying, but everyone is living as if they will never die. That's the most astonishing thing. Around them, everything is dying. They are not, but they live like, that won't happen to me. Or they will say, yeah, that will happen, but not yet. I have so much time yet. Of course, in one sense, you are eternal. But the point here is, for those who are not aware of this eternal dimension, they live as if they were eternal in connection to things that are not. So this is the greatest wonder of life. And he was correct. He passed the test. He hit the button. So that's quite paradoxical. Power of Maya Shakti, not to underestimate. Krishna over and over say, Daibi yesha gunamai mamamaya duratya. Not so easy to transcend this Maya Shakti. Mami vaye prupadinte mayamitanta. If you surrender to me sincerely, only that can happen. Only in them can it can happen. Okay, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. It's one paragraph when he gives kind of a summary to today's verse, and we'll put our session to rest. And maybe some of you as well. <That's it. laughs> He gives a summary saying, Brahma prayed. In summary, the universe is material and the medium-sized form of Krishna is Sudha-sattva, or Satchitananda, completely spiritual. The very essence of the material world is that its existence is temporary, asat. It is unreal like a dream, but nevertheless it appears real and covers one's consciousness, astadishanam. The universe appears real because it is manifested by the illusory energy of you, Mayata, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of Sandini Shakti, Nitya, Ladini Shakti, Sukha, and Sambit Shakti, Bodha. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's summary of today's verse. Again, on one side speaking about the world as Asat, Achit, Nirananda, but contrasting, but you, although you appear to be here, you are the very embodiment, the murti of Satchit Ananda, or more specifically Sandini Sambit Ladini Shakti. So here we've finished one particular section of prayers, and I think tomorrow we have another class in the morning.
Yeah,
same class.
And
Brahma Stuti, today and tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, same timing. So we will begin a new section of verses, if you will, where Brahma will be fervently praising and enumerating different attributes of Krishna. And with this, the passion will increase and get him closer and closer to the end, where he will just basically explode glorifying Vrindavan and the Vrajavasis and praying to forever anywhere in Vrindavan and so on. But today we'll finish here. Unless there are any questions or commentaries you may like to share. Yes, Rikupad.
Can I comment something?
Yeah.
Srinivas Suri, I remember correctly, was comparing this world to a rabbit's horn.
That was Jiva Goswami.
Jiva Goswami.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a very interesting comparison, because a rabbit's horn is unreal.
Unreal.
But it's not totally unreal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a zhurni.
Which nobody knows what the hell it means.
That's nothing.
It's something that is two things combined in a way that is not...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There are rabbits, there are horns. And this is in Sanskrit, this is called a vikalpa.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in reality, but only on the level of words.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have that word, rabbit's horn, and we can imagine it easily, like a pushpa akasha, like a flower in the sky or something like that. So there is some reality, but the combination is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly with this world, there is reality, but the combination, how we understand it, that's incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's a very good word to describe this, this world.
Rabbit's horn.
Yes.
Yeah. As you said, the combination is incorrect because you may be contacting Maya Shakti, but you are not combining Maya Shakti with her source.
Mm.
So the result is something that is not fully real in every single sense of the term, as you mentioned. Like we say, the dream experience, which somehow is not real, but it's real at the same time. But not in every single sense of the term. What else? Something else? Some other question, commentary? Any of the online connected devotees? Okay, we are getting closer to 1 hour, 8 minutes. So again, auspicious time to finish, 108. See you tomorrow, same time. And today in the evening we have Q&A at 5:30. It's to go to the Q&A. So if you have any further questions regarding this or any other topics, we can meet later today. Shri Gurudev ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Granth Sahib Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda.